cycling podcast Femina in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, brought to you by Skoda. Dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Orla Shinawee.
Hello.
And Rose Manley.
Hi.
Rose, you okay with that, being introduced second? You all right
yeah.
by that?
No, that's my rightful place.
Why do you always try to make an issue
dealing with your egos, you know, it's really difficult.
Can I just let our lovely listeners know how Richard now does this every single time we start our podcast? He'll say, hello, I'm Richard Moore. And then he'll point his finger into the air like he's leaving us in suspense as to who he's going to point it at first, who gets like top billing. We don't really care. We're a team, Richard. And it's not up to you to decide.
Oh, ho, ho.
We are we not?
We are a team.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
We are. We are. We are. It's, actually, there's nothing contrived about that. I am genuinely not sure.
Trying to remember.
Well, yeah. Sometimes you do that thing where you point at Orla and then you say my name.
Yeah.
And then everyone listening must just think, does she not know who
keep
she
you on
is?
Your toes.
I'm like, hello?
Keep you on your toes. Keep you on your toes. So we're in September. This is September episode of the cycling podcast Femina. We're on the eve of the World Championships. We're talking on Friday. The team time trial is on Sunday. This episode's going to come out on Monday.
Bit of bad planning.
Creates a little bit of a problem. But you're going to hear a little voice will come in after on the interviews to tell you whether what happened in that interview did happen or not.
And I hope you
that'll
do
all
a
become,
little voice.
That'll all become clear
well,
later
no,
on. Might not
like
be
this.
My voice. What else have we got in this month's episode? We've got interviews looking ahead to Worlds with Hannah Barnes and Ashley Moulman-Passio. We're going to have some interview reaction from the Madrid Challenge, which was last week. The final Women's World Tour race of the season, wasn't it?
No, we've got another one to come.
Oh, sorry. China.
Yeah, China.
Forgot about that.
The big one.
Final one in Europe. And in part three, we're going to look back at the women's 100.
The
which
real,
Rose,
yeah, marquee event of the year.
You did. You did it.
I did.
Fueled by Mars ice cream and all.
Yes, I was.
Fueled by science
yeah.
and sport.
Yeah, I think in the package I'll sound quite chipper, but there were moments when I definitely was not chipper. What's
Orla,
the opposite of chipper?
You appeared at the start.
Do chipper, unchippered.
You appeared at the start to give the ride your blessing.
Yes.
I gave a little benediction at the beginning. Waved them all off in their merry way and then trotted back to my car. Yeah.
To your bouncy castle, wasn't it?
To my... Yeah, trotted back to my bouncy castle. Yeah. That sounds much weirder than it is. I was hosting a birthday party for my daughter that afternoon. So we had a bouncy castle delivered while I was at the Ride 100. So I had to go back and supervise that all afternoon. So actually, I think it would have been a lot easier to go out in 100 kilometres and supervise children high on sugar and smashing a piñata in the garden. But
okay, we'll swap
needs
next
must.
Year. We'll swap. See how you get on.
Well, before any of that, however, we need the news roundup, Orla. Have you prepared for this?
Oh, what do you think?
I think you probably have.
I think I probably have. Are we ready? It gets such a big build-up every time, right? It makes me a bit nervous.
Well, I mean, you know, expectation.
Indeed.
High.
Yes, we have a lot of news to round up on, actually. Not just the racing, but obviously it is transfer season as well. And not just World Tour races, but a few others. So I will get stuck in. Ladies Tour of Norway, I think, is where we left it in the last episode.
Seems
cast
so long
your mind
ago.
Back. I know, it was a long time ago. We'd already mentioned the opening team time trial. It was won by Sunweb. Mitchelton Scott second, Cervelo Bigla in third. Marianne Vos came into this race off the back of her win at Vargarda, and she came into this as a defending champion. 4 days after that win at Vargarda, Vos followed up with another victory, a long sprint from 200 metres out on the uphill finishing straight of stage one. A strong race as well from Carol Ann Canuel of Bowles Dolman. She went off the front with Flirty Mackay of Team Sunweb.
Scotland.
Scotland's Mackay caught, But Canyewell stayed out front until the 100-metre mark when Voss came past her. And Wiggle High Five's Amelia Fallon came around the other side to finish in second, and Canyewell managed to hold on for third. Stage two was a third win in a row for Mariana Voss. Team Sunweb tried to break the race apart on stage two. They attacked off the front every time they were brought back, though. Cassie Nieuwiedoma of Canyon SRAM started her sprint early, but Voss stayed in her wheel and was able to jump for the win. For the second day in a row, Amelia Fallon finished runner-up to Voss, the Swedish champion led out by Kirsten Wild. And after all Sunweb's efforts, Corin Rivera was the best finisher in that squad. She came in seventh after a solo attack by Lucinda Brand had been brought back within the last 3K. Stage three, guess who won? Who's on a roll? Are you listening? Are you paying attention?
I know, I was just saying.
Oh, caught out the both of you.
I was checking Voss. The Women's World
well
Tour rankings.
Well done, Rose.
Thank you.
Yes, Voss did the triple, won the race overall, her fourth win in a row. A strong tactical performance by Corin Rivera, actually, and her Sunweb team once again. They picked up bonus seconds on the intermediate sprints, and her second place finish on the day before moved her from fourth. Her second place finish this day moved her from fourth on the GC up to third, and a podium finish. Lucinda Brand and Flirty Mackay had both been pushing for stage win to try to deny Voss the top spot, but came down to a sprint, and the US champion Rivera managed to do enough anyway to get on to the podium. The Swedish champion Amelia Fallon narrowly lost out to Voss in the first two stages and was third in the sprint on this day. She finished as overall runner-up. Mitchelton Scott rode an aggressive race, but the team's protected rider Gracie Elvin finished 10th on the stage. She was 11th overall. Team Sunweb won the team classification of the Ladies Tour of Norway, and Voss then moved past Anna van der Breggen into first place in the UCI Women's World Tour ranking. So that was the first time actually that the purple jersey was on the shoulders of a Bols Dolmans rider since the Tour of Flanders, and it's the first time for Voss to be leading that classification, quite remarkably. Then we had the GP de Plouay. You're looking confused. Do you think that's not the case?
Well, you said first time it was on the shoulders of a Bols Dolmans rider.
Not on the shoulders of a Bols.
Sorry, as you were.
You're paying attention though, that's good. The GP de Plouay then, Amy Peters of Bols Dolmans took the win from a 15 strong group after a busy old final 20 kilometres, plenty of attacks there. The Dutch woman beating Mariana Voss and Corin Rivera into second and third. But her second place for Voss meant that she kept the purple at Women's World Tour leaders jersey. It was a very active race for Voss actually. She was part of a number of breaks. She went away with Cecily Utrip-Ludwig twice, once with Eugenia Bujak of BTC City Ljubljana and once with Lion Lip. Get her name right. Leanne Lippert from Team Sunweb. Because it was a really busy last 20K. There were so many attacks. It was actually quite difficult to follow. Cassie Nieuwiedoma of Canyon SRAM, then Elisa Longo Borghini of Wiggle High Five, followed by Voss, attacked on the final climb. They were caught there with just over 3K to go. Then we had Megan Guarnier, Milman Passio, and Guarnier again all tried to get away. But in the end, Soria Paladin of Ali Cipollini managed to get out front with 1.3 kilometres to go, but she was caught at the end. Voss came past her with 200 metres to go. Amy Peters had followed Amanda Spratt to the other side, and she came past Voss with about 50 metres left on the road. Corin Rivera came just short against Voss for second, but she beat Lena Cecchini of Canyon SRAM into third place. So Voss, even though she was beaten to victory, once again remained head of the Women's World Tour. The Bols Ladies Tour then. Last year, Annemiek van Vleuten won the overall title on home soil ahead of her compatriots Anna van der Breggen and Ellen van Dijk. And in the prologue, which was a 3.3 kilometre course, the time trial world champion van Vleuten took the first leader's jersey for second year in a row, beating, of course, van der Breggen, beat her by a whole 7 seconds, actually, with a time of 4 minutes 22. And Ellen van Dijk of Team Sunweb rounded out the old Dutch podium, so picking up the race where it left off the year before. Stage one of the Bols Ladies Tour. Van Vleuten followed up her prologue win with a solo victory, and she beat the field by 12 seconds with Eugenia Bujak of BTC City Ljubljana and Alina Cecchini finishing second and third. Now, this was a remarkable end to the stage because Van Vleuten was 40 seconds ahead over the last climb, and she took a wrong turn on the descent and lost most of her lead. It was remarkable. And the Mur van Beek featured in this stage. You may remember that from the 2016 Giro d'Italia. But it was on the final climb of the Oude Holleweg that van der Breggen and van Vleuten attacked to break up the race. Now, they were joined by Elisa Longo Borghini, and they had a gap on the rest, but didn't work well together. Van der Breggen in particular didn't seem happy. And this seems to be a bit of a trend of late. She didn't do an awful lot of work to keep that break away. And so unsurprisingly, they were brought back again. Van Vleuten, though, put in another acceleration 20 kilometres out. She was chased by an elite group, Van der Breggen, Ellen van Dijk, Longo Borghini, but she did have Amanda Spratt, her teammate in the group, to sit on and help control. Now, those four became 34 with 13 kilometres to go. And this is when Van Vleuten had a 40-second lead. It was on the race back down the Mur van Beek with less than 6 kilometres to go that she took a wrong turn at a fork in the road, headed into roadworks instead of the race course. I shouldn't laugh, really. By the time she was back on the course, her lead had been cut from 40 seconds to 10, but she managed to hold on and won by 12 seconds. That's really quite remarkable. Stage two was a large breakaway which finished in a sprint. Emily Didriksen of Bols Dolmans beating Lorena Vivas of Park Hotel Valkenburg and Julian Dora of Mitchelton Scott. Annemiek van Vleuten stayed in the overall lead. A good day for Lucinda Brand. She went into the virtual race lead at one stage, but didn't manage to keep that. Stage three, Didriksen made it two in a row. She beat Lucinda Brand of Team Sunweb and Lorena Vivas of Park Hotel Valkenburg again to the line. A worthy mention on stage three for the Israeli champion, Omer Shapira. We won't have heard very much about her, but she attacked in her own 6 kilometres into the race, built up a lead of 3:50 at one stage with 32 kilometres to go. Now, that seemed to be partly because the sprinters teams were happy to let her go, but doesn't take away from her because she almost rode into the virtual lead, even though she started the stage 4:12 down. So great day for her. And then stage four went to the Tom Dumoulin Bike Park. Did we know that existed?
Yes.
I went there last year.
Oh, just me then. Wonderful place by all accounts. Anyway, another win for Bols Dolmans.
Fantastic toilet facilities there.
Really? But how are the ladies' toilets facilities? Because this is a cycling podcast for a minute, and if you know the answer to that, I'll be very concerned. Chantal Black. Chantal Black won stage four, one of her last outings in the rainbow jersey. Stage five saw Annemiek van Vleuten take the final time trial, confirmed her status as a dominant stage racer of the season, and she beat Ellen van Dijk by 22 seconds. Then on to the Madrid Challenge. Stage one of that, of course, the organisers added an extra stage this year. It was a team time trial. Bit of a run out for the trade teams before the Worlds. Defending world champions team Sunweb took that win ahead of Wiggle High Five and then Mitchelton Scott. And stage two, a swan song for Giorgia Bronzini, calling an end to her 16-year career with the stage win. So a wonderful finish for her after she, she goes off to become a DS at the new Trek Factory racing team. And it was Ellen van Dijk who won that race overall. Into other news, Cassie and Evia Doma won the Tour de l'Ardèche as well as the combined and mountains classification in that six-day race. The R record was broken. That's R. For those who don't speak Northern Irish, that's 60 minutes.
The 60-minute world record.
The 60-minute world record is how we like to say that in Northern Ireland. Vittoria Bussi, the Italian, became the first ever woman to surpass 48 kilometres. She got 48.007 kilometres. Dun, dun. Oh, I can't even think of the theme tune.
Is that Jaws?
I was going to dun, do dun, 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 dun. That's Mission Impossible. And it wasn't Mission Impossible, but it might have looked that way. That was her third attempt. I'd almost planned it. That was her third attempt. So she had tried it back in October 2017. The record had been held by Evelyn Stevens. But then she tried it again earlier last month, was it? Was it last month?
She had a go on the
Wednesday,
and then it was like Graham O'Bree when he narrowly failed one day and then had another go the next day and broke it. It was the same thing. I think she went for 40 minutes on the Wednesday.
44 minutes.
44 minutes. Yeah. And then decided to can it, have another go the next day and broke it.
And she did it. Amazing. A little bit of transfer news. Trixie Warwick is the latest rider to sign for Trek Factory Racing. She's leaving Canyon SRAM after 6 years. They've also confirmed Audrey Cordon-Rago joining from Wiggle High Five. So they've got a roster of 11 now in that team, and a very, very strong team it looks to be. In other transfer news, the German rider Clara Koppenberg of Cervélo Bigla joins the WNT Rotor team. From Cervélo Bigla, I said that bit. She joins Lisa Brenner, Kirsten Wild on the team's roster for next season. Roxanne Fernier has been announced as Movistar's first new signing for 2019. She's leaving FDJ. And not so much transfer news, but Mariana Voss has been announced that she will head up the new CCC squad. Wow Deals are merging with the former BMC outfit to create a revamped version of the women's team and add a women's arm to the new men's team. Incidentally, right, so Dave Brailsford said recently at an event I was at that Team Sky will be looking very closely at how they can invest more in women's racing over the winter. Now, it doesn't sound like that they're about to announce a women's Team Sky, but they seem to realise that it's an area that they can no longer afford to ignore.
As we,
I think they'll look at it very closely.
But I wonder what that means. I mean, as we heard in last month's episode in the interview with Service Canavan, they back his women's junior team. If that becomes under 23 team, maybe they'll support that team. But it's all very vague, that, isn't
that
it?
We don't really know. Very vague, but he said it in a way that made it sound like it's an actual plan, some sort of a plan to work on. Mm. Not news, just gossip, bit of speculation.
You mentioned Ashley Moolman moving to CCC there, didn't you?
I didn't.
Ah, well, there's another big transfer. Oh. She, I mean, that was a surprising one for me because I see her as being so closely identified with Cervélo Bigla as their leader and really the team, the rider around whom the rest of the team is built. And so that's a big move for her. I went to see her earlier this week, actually, at the end of the Vuelta. On my way home, I went to see her in her new place overlooking Banyoles. And we'll hear that interview in full over the winter, but we'll hear a little bit of it in today's episode. But a big change for her going from having all that responsibility and pressure as the sole team leader to working with someone like Mariana Voss, and we'll hear a little bit about that later on. Trixie Warrack was a surprising one as well, because she's been such a mainstay in that team in its various guises. Trixie Warrack, I always think she sounds like a country and western star rather than a German cyclist.
So one final bit of news, the women's tour has gone up to 6 days. I think that's in response to our wonderful coverage. They want us on the road for an extra day, Richard and Rose. What do we think? Fine.
Can we manage an extra day in each other's company? After the intensity of the last time.
We actually had a ball.
It's got worse and worse.
No, it was good. It was great. It was a fantastic experience and well deserved that the race goes up to 6 days. Yeah. I thought it was interesting. Mick Bennett, in making this announcement, said that it'll give them the opportunity to also put on a different kind of race with a more variety in the stages. And I think that's what it was crying out for this year. Maybe a very hilly stage, one that can attract some of the best climbers who were perhaps missing this year. So 6 days, that's on the right track. Maybe it should be even longer, and maybe that'll be the way it
goes. I think they want to make it longer. I think it's a case of getting the right permission and getting British Cycling on board and authorities and whatnot. But at least it's going the right way, certainly.
Oval Energy Women's Tour up to 6 days. Bring on next year.
Bring it on. I can't wait for the intensity.
I've missed the intensity.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you very much to our headline sponsor, Rafa, for backing the cycling podcast, Femina. Grateful to them as ever. We'll hear in the final part, of course, about the Rafa Women's 100 that Rose took part in. And we'll be going off to Innsbruck and the World Championships, all armed with a Pedaleuse de Charme t-shirt, maybe two. But one is for Cecilia Utrecht-Ludwig after La Course. And we've been trying to get it to her, have failed, but she's expecting it in Innsbruck and we'll be presenting it to her there. So Hannah Troop was in Madrid for the Madrid Challenge and she spoke to the overall winner, Ellen van Dijk, and also Giorgia Bronzini, who won the final stage. And that was her final race, of course, as a professional. So let's hear first from Ellen van Dijk. This is not really coming in the right order, but we'll hear first from Ellen van Dijk once she'd won the overall, and then hear from Bronzini before the team time trial. And then we'll hear from her after the road race that she won. And she tells us a bit about her future as a DS with Trek Factory Racing.
So Ellen, you're sat here in the purple leader's jersey of Madrid Challenge. How does it feel?
Yeah, I'm very surprised actually, because I never expected that. Yeah, today we were going full for Corinne, our sprinter. Yeah, we wanted to win the stage with her here in the GC, but in the end, yeah, it turned out completely different. So yeah, we didn't get a stage win, but still a GC win. So yeah, it's really great, but surprisingly.
But obviously, the 2 day stage started off well yesterday with the team time trial. So you must have been feeling pretty confident sort of after that yesterday.
Yeah, we had a good plan going into the race. Like I said, we wanted to do some bonification sprints with Corinne, and then go for the final sprint with her. And we would always have been safe in GC, I think, to take the GC win. The GC win was our main goal. But in the end, yeah, it's a shame we couldn't get to a bunch sprint with Corinne, and we couldn't go for stage win. But yeah, we won the GC, and we are 1, 2, and 3 in GC, so it's still a really good result.
And what were the messages too between all of the team when you were in the break, and it looked like it wasn't going to come back? So when did you know that it wasn't going to come back?
Actually, only in the last quarter. I mean, all the time the gap was so close that, that I thought that we would be caught. So yeah, I never rode in the break, and I was always just patient, and I thought I was preparing for a lead out for Corinne still actually, but yeah, that never came. So yeah, it was a weird race in that way, but yeah, good in the end.
And it's a good way for you to finish off with Team Sunweb before you head on to new ventures, right?
Yeah, of course. It's always great to win your last race in this team. So it also would have been good if Corinne would have won. But yeah, I'm really happy to end it in this way.
So, Georgia, how are you feeling today? You've just been and done a recce of the course. How was it?
Really technical. And yeah, a lot of climbing that I was unexpected also for Read Just a Book. It will be quite interesting. I don't know how much the best team could do the average speed compared to other team time trial, but we'll see.
And how are you feeling being in Madrid? And obviously this is coming towards the end of your retirement season. How are you feeling?
Yeah, a bit nervous, because one part of me obviously is already with the tears in the eyes to be one of the last race of my career. Well, the conclusion of the TTT is will be not my best effort to do, but I will hope tomorrow to be in the race and try to do a good result tomorrow. So today I called for me just a warm up for tomorrow.
Because obviously, yeah, the sprint course would be a good way to finish the career, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
And how are you feeling ahead of moving to Trek? Because obviously that's going to be a big move for you next year. You're going straight into DS with a bit of a bang.
Yeah, I'm quite nervous, honestly, because, yeah, working alongside Ina Teutenberg is a lot of responsibility, I think so. And we'll be a really new team and big team with a lot of big name, and I don't know how much advice I could give already to a lot of champion that I will work with, but I will put all my effort to stay next to them and help as I can.
Because that's the thing, the roster that you've got already, or the ones that have been announced so far, it's going to be a really strong team. You're really going to come in and put the fright into some of the other teams, I guess.
Yeah, it would be really interesting to see how the girls will move together, but I think it's a good mix of champion that we make up, so I'm really confident in this.
So that must have been like a dream come true. Take us through those last few moments of that sprint.
I could not ask more than what we have done. I really need to thank my teammate Rossella Ratto that gave heart for me today, and I don't know, I'm just so much happy for finishing this way. Yeah, I think could be the dream of everyone to finish the career with a big win. So
there would have been a lot of people happy to see you go across that line in first place. No,
I receive a lot of congrats by other opponents, and that is what makes me really, really super happy, because it means that I mean something for women's cycling, and they recognize this, and I have my heart in. I still will work with, but in the end, I finish in the best way as a rider, so I'm really proud of.
And so this morning when you set out, was that the plan, and did it execute? Obviously, it was to perfection, but was it exactly how you expected it to pan out?
Was my hope, because
I knew that if I come in a little bunch sprint, I could play with a win. And it was just all the bunch. I'm less powerful than other sprinters and more dangerous. So it was really, really perfect and how I hope in my mind.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Féminin, brought to you by Skoda. Dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time.
Thank you very much to Skoda for supporting the cycling podcast Féminin, association that began at the Women's Tour and is continuing the rest of the year. And their support is very much appreciated and it's helping us cover more races, such as the World Championships next week. We're going out to the World Championships, aren't we, Orla?
We are indeed. That's the plan.
So before the break there, we heard from Giorgia Bronzini talking a little bit about her future. Admitted, she's a bit nervous about it. She's obviously got vast experience as a rider, but yeah, it is very different.
And a lot of pressure. And
especially in a new team, you know, gelling together these riders. Ellen van Dijk, who we heard from there, is also another rider who's going to be riding for Trek next year.
But that's it, a new team and a very, very strong team. And all riders say how difficult it is to make that transition from rider to DS, especially, well, if you're on the same team, but making that transition to being at the same dinner table with all your teammates and being on a level to then being a step apart and trying to tell them what to do. I think, it's a new job for her, really, isn't it?
Exciting, though, as well, I would think. It's going to be an interesting story to follow. Madrid Challenge, though, it's been around a few years now and they added a team time trial this year. WNT are the sponsors, they back a team as well. But some of the big teams were missing. Bols Dolmans, Canyon SRAM, Cervelo Bigla were all missing. And you feel, I don't know if a team time trial is the right event to add to supplement or complement the circuit race in Madrid on the final day. I don't really feel like this event has properly established itself.
Well, it's a bit strange, but the timing as well. I mean, bringing in a team time trial, obviously you don't know the timeline of organising these things, but bringing in a team time trial when they're about to remove it from the World Championships.
And it was
like
a very technical course as well. I mean, very twisty, turny and slightly odd. And it happened, obviously, miles and miles or kilometres and kilometres away from the Vuelta, which it is loosely tied to. So, yeah, quite strange.
And I felt really overshadowed by action at the Vuelta, which is always going to be the danger. But as you say, because it's so far away from the action that's happening there, for all the criticism of any of the one-day events that are pinned onto a Grand Tour, at least you've got the crowds and the atmosphere and all of the race furniture and razzmatazz that come with a Grand Tour. And I felt we got to the road stage, the individual stage of the Madrid Challenge, and I thought, and I totally missed the team time trial.
Yeah.
I thought it was very underwhelmingly promoted.
It's on the same day as everything is going on in the Vuelta. You know, the whole Vuelta is being decided,
yeah,
in Andorra, and then in Madrid, some people, you know, some riders are going around a flat course. Yeah, very really odd. And then that, you know, how that translates then to the winning the overall. I mean, I don't know how much, you know, honour Ellen van Dijk puts in winning something where, you know, she was part of a winning team time trial and then...
But the race belonged to Bronzini, really, didn't it? It seems odd that van Dijk won
format.
It. It is odd.
I mean, in their defence, we've got to be, I guess, a bit positive, though, about adding days to these women's races that are added onto the Grand Tours, because it is what we want from La Course, for example. So we can't denigrate it on that level, but I'm just not sure it was the right way to add an extra stage, really.
I also think from the team's perspective, we might have seen teams staying away from it because of the hassle of having to send all your time trial bikes down to Madrid when you're going to have them back in Innsbruck shortly after. I mean, like a week after.
It's huge expense and hassle.
And so what, you know, and it's for one day Vårgårda is different, comes before the Tour of Norway where they always have a time trial again. So there's a reason to send your bikes up to Scandinavia and do several races with plenty on the line. But here, I mean, it just seems like a bit of a logistical nightmare.
Speaking of team time trials, Sunday, the team time trial is well, by the time you hear this, it will have been on Sunday, the team time trial. The
Wasn't
World
it great? How exciting was that?
Oh, it was amazing. Who could have predicted that, though? Like, never in a million years did I expect that to happen.
I'm not sure about that, Orla. That's a bit of an exaggeration. But by the miracles of technology, you will hear a little bit about what happened. But before we do, I visited Hannah Barnes in Girona on my way home from the Vuelta the other day. And I spoke to her about the World Championships. She's running the team time trial and the road race, not the time trial. She's a bit annoyed to miss out on the time trial, but after riding well last year in Bergen, her team's Canyon SRAM have a great record in the team time trial at the World Championships. So here's what she had to say.
It's an event that we always try and target because it's just such a team orientated event. And I get so nervous for it. It's a... one of those ones you just, it's different in a road race when you just not let your team down but can't really do the job. But in a team time trial, it's just, you have to do everything 100% and put everything into it. And my first one was Doha with Canyon and they'd won it the last 4 years. So I was really nervous going into that.
Are you confident this time?
Yeah, I mean, we were in Innsbruck last week for 4 days doing some practice on the course and it actually went really well. That was our first camp of the year doing team time trial and the first time that all six of us had ridden together. So, it was really good to do it. And we've got another three or four days leading up to the event too. So, it's good.
How do you feel about the event being dropped?
I don't know. I mean, it does take up a lot of time. If you want to do it properly and perform well, then it does take up a lot of time and money for the teams. We're going to Worlds... 6 days before the event to practice and there's just a lot of, I wouldn't say pressure, but it's just one of those events that you really want to be on the podium, all six of you. So I don't know, I mean, I've heard different ideas that they're going to do for the following years,
which
actually sounds quite cool. See how that goes.
Interesting. So then you'll have a week in Innsbruck before the road races. You're not riding the time trial, are you?
No.
What are your thoughts about the road race? Have you looked at the course? What do you think of it?
I haven't actually seen the course. I've heard a lot of things about it. It's going to be a quite challenging day. I was going to go out there and recon it, but I broke my collarbone and that just kind of was sidelined a bit. And I've heard a lot that if you've not got the legs that day, then it doesn't matter if you've seen the course no times or 100 times, it's not going to make much of a difference. So I'm pleased that I'm there for a week and I can go and ride the course. And I think the rest of the road team are going to be there on the Tuesday, so we've got a lot of time before the road race to be together.
Fond memories for you from last year, because you rode really well in the road race last year. Does that provide a sort of a motivation for this?
Last year it was really nice finishing on such a high, and going into the off season it was nice just to have that motivation and just kind of what's going to happen the next season. But I mean, this year it started really well winning Valencia, and then it's kind of not much has gone on in the middle, so everyone's saying to me I can just bookmark the season and start well and end well. But yeah, for me it's an event that it's quite unique because you spend all year racing with your trade team, and then that one race of the year you're with GB, which is really cool. We've got a team this year that I think only three of us have taken part in the World Championships, so it's pretty cool. There's going to be a lot of excited riders there.
Quick update, this is a voice from the future added after the recording of this episode, but as many of you will know, Canyon SRAM with Hannah Barnes, her sister Alice, Alina Amilusic, Alina Cicchini, Lisa Klein and Trixie Warrack won the team time trial. They were the only team to finish with full complement of six riders, and they look tremendous with different coloured disc wheels and socks to match. Wiggle High Five went out really quickly and they were fastest the first time check, but they lost two riders, Katie Archibald and Amelia Fallon, finished with the minimum of four and eventually finished out the medals in fourth place. Canyon SRAM completed the 54.7 kilometre course in 1 hour 1 minute and 47 seconds, beating Bulls Dolmans into second place by 22 seconds, with the defending champion Sunweb third at just over 28 seconds. So victory for Canyon SRAM in the final trade team time trial at the UCI World Championships.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
The voice there of Seb Piquet reminds me to tell you this month's episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina is supported by The Economist.
Yeah, The Economist is about far more than just economics and finance. It covers a range of subjects from politics and business, science, technology, arts, and even sport. The Economist helps readers prepare for what's going on in the world around them. And of course, in today's dynamic world, facts matter more than ever. For over 170 years, The Economist has delivered trustworthy intelligence that helps people like you choose where to stand on the issues that matter most. So, Richard, your job this month was to find an article that interested you. What caught your eye?
Well, the article that caught my eye is called The Deciders, and it was in the magazine a week or so ago, and it's about the thorny issue of how social media platforms, in this case Facebook and YouTube, take responsibility for and censor what people say on their platforms. This is something that we're all interested in and concerned about, I think. It goes into quite fascinating detail about the weekly meetings at Facebook and YouTube when actual real people discuss the content that's been posted, and they decide basically whether it should be taken down or left up. The Economist says that seeing how each company moderates content is encouraging, but there's cause for concern, with both companies well on their way to becoming ministries of truth for a global audience. Never before has such a small number of firms been able to control what billions can say and see. It is fascinating, though, how, as the magazine says, these sorts of decisions have moved from being peripheral activity to being core to their very business. And by the end of this year, Facebook will have doubled the number of people who work on the safety and security of the site to 20,000, including 10,000 content reviewers. YouTube also have 10,000 people working on content moderation. Twitter, unfortunately, struggles to put as many resources into this because it doesn't have the same financial muscle, which is a concern because it's on Twitter that a lot of people would say some of the biggest problems are. But there is a fundamental problem with this as well, says The Economist, and it's the firm's business model. To sell more and more ads, Facebook's algorithms, for instance, have favoured engaging content, which can often be the bad kind. YouTube, meanwhile, keeps users on its site by offering them ever more interesting videos, which can also be ever more extreme ones. In other words, to really solve the challenge of content moderation, the big social media platforms may have to say goodbye to the business model which made them so successful. So that was just another interesting article in The Economist called The Deciders. The Economist is the smart guide to the forces changing your world. And to get your free copy now, text BIKES, B-I-K-E-S, to 78070. That's BIKES to 78070. That's a free print copy of The Economist to all listeners of the Cycling Podcast Femina. So coming this week in Innsbruck, we've got the time trial and the road, well, the time trials and the road races. What can we expect, Orla, from the time trial? Annemiek van Vleuten, the defending champion.
So hard to see past her. I just can't see how anyone else will manage
beat
to
her.
Sneak. Yeah, I that's the logical conclusion to that sentence. But even, you know, when you look at... She basically time trialed from...
She had a 40-second lead. 20, and
you
then
were listening. You were listening.
She she lost 30 seconds, if my maths is 20K correct.
20K out, and she still lost 10... She still lost 30 seconds and still managed to win it. I mean, if that's not a phenomenal time trial performance, I don't know what is.
So she can afford to take a wrong turning on Wednesday and still and still win it.
Well, she probably could. She probably could. I can't really see past her for either race, to be perfectly honest. And I think we could have... I've been looking up to see when the last time this was done, the double, in the time trial and the road race, and it's 1995. Jenny Longo, the French woman, is the last one to win both. And I would not be surprised if Annemiek van Vleuten won both of them this time around. Although we did see at the European Championships that Dutch dominance doesn't necessarily lead to victory, and so the worlds out of any of the races are the ones that are open to surprises. But I would not be surprised if she were to win both.
Well, I'm fascinated to see how those Dutch tactics play out because, yeah, I mean, Chantal Black really last year, you could say, benefited from having two such watched and heavily marked teammates up there as well. This is a much harder course. It might not be, there might not be so many riders in contention, so it might be less tactical in a way, but it's still going to be, you would imagine that whatever selection there is, that Van Vleuten and Van der Breggen are likely to be there. And then, you know, what happens is a really intriguing question. And there has been this battle between them and these very close races between them this year, and a sense that they both really want to win the World Road Race, because neither's won it amazingly. You know, they've won just about everything else between them. They've never won the World Road Race Championship.
And what's really interesting about Van der Breggen as well is that we were told, weren't we, at the women's tour, that she wasn't going to race again at all until the Worlds, and that was going to be her single focus for the rest of the season. It wasn't in the end. She has come back and raced. But her style of racing I have found really quite peculiar. Because she has been so dominant until this season, really, she just hasn't done any of the work on any of the breakaways that she's been in, and she's allowed those breaks to be brought back again, even though it's meant that she hasn't been the one that's been strong enough to win. So her racing tactic has been bizarre, but certainly it's been very much for her and all about her. I cannot see how they're going to designate a team leader and all work for them in that Dutch team.
I mean, I'd love to sit in on that team meeting. I wonder if that at a certain point would they just say, get to a certain point and then...
Could we sneak Orla in there? Could we sneak you in there, Orla, with a little recording device?
Well, I'm learning Dutch, aren't I?
Yeah. So maybe
I could, you can translate afterwards.
Yeah. Maybe I could...
As long as they were asking for, like, you know, 3 oranges, please, in the shop or something like that.
How's your Dutch? How's your Dutch coming along? Can you give us a little blast? Maybe
not
each
really.
Month we'll do a bit
and
more.
Maybe we'll do a little bit of Dutch with Orla. Not really. My name is Orla.
What does that mean?
Ik woon in London. I just said London with what I think was a Dutch accent. That
well,
was
you
terrible.
Made a really
London.
Good start there, Steve McLaren.
That flopped. But I could maybe sneak in. You never know.
Interesting on Van Vleuten, who's really, as you say, looked unbeatable this year and it seems to have stepped up this year. Mm. When I went to visit Ashley Moolman Passio a few days ago, and we'll hear a little bit of Van's view in a moment or two, I asked her about her and, you know, how she was able to, you know, step it up and appear to be on a different level to everybody else, especially at the Giro. And she just said that she, in women's cycling now, there are a few, and she's really foremost among them, who are able to do the things that men are doing in terms of going to altitude for lengths of time and invest in equipment and in time trial equipment and wind tunnels and all this kind of stuff. And she said that Van Vleuten, of all the riders, is really at the vanguard of that among the women in terms of making those sacrifices, living that life and being able to do that, which was interesting, I thought, because we're seeing more and more men do that and really lead quite extreme lives of, you know, living on top of a... She's talking about living, you know, living on top of a mountain in, you know, in Andorra or Tenerife or somewhere. Not everybody, A, wants to do that, and B, can do that or can afford to do that. And Van Vleuten has been doing that, and obviously with great success.
And it's interesting because she's 35 now, isn't she? So it's not like she's... her early 30s, and there's always this argument that women maybe come into their peak a little bit later, but it is remarkable what she's managed to do. Going back to what you're saying about the team meeting, though, I was chatting to Wout Poels, the men's Dutch rider, about tactics for the men's team, and he was saying about the their race meeting, their team meeting. He said that he would sit down in that race meeting and agree to whatever they were told to do and then go out and do what he wants to do anyway. So I think that's probably going to be exactly the same in the women's Dutch team.
The Dutch are funny. I mean, this is a bit of a tangent, but, you know, there is, and they have this reputation of football as well as being great individuals and sometimes not such a great team. And I remember hearing stories about Wout Poels. He won Liège-Bastogne-Liège in 2016, and apparently he was on an altitude training camp in Tenerife after that when the Giro was on, and Steven Kruiswijk, the Dutch rider, was leading the Giro for much of the race. Looked like he was going to win it. Apparently Wout Poels was really furious because it meant he might not win Dutch Cyclist of the Year. And that seems to sum up the Dutch mentality a lot of the time. There is this internal rivalry, you know, brilliant individuals, but don't always gel as a team. It is a climbery course, and we're in danger of only talking about the Dutch riders because they've got such a strong team and the two strongest riders in the race, you would think. But there are other riders who, you know, will certainly fancy it. And one of them is Ashley Moolman. So I spoke to her about the Worlds, and here's what she had to say.
Yeah, of course, it's a great course. It's a tough course. It's a climbing course. It would have been wonderful to have had the steep climb. I think it just would have added extra sort of drama or suspense or some extra element to the race, which is something that, you know, a lot of us as women are becoming quite vocal about. You know, we've just recently seen the course for Tokyo and it's the same story. You know, it's missing the sort of key element of the race. But, you know, having said that, it still is a very tough race. It's almost 160 kilometers long, with 2,500 meters of elevation, and the final three circuits include an 8 kilometer climb, which we do three times. So, you know, that in itself is a hard course. So yeah, it's definitely a race that I'm targeting. But having said that, at the same time, I also know that I don't have a team. So that's a huge disadvantage for me, you know.
Your task is in a way simple if you don't have teammates. I'm thinking in particular, you know, you could be Dutch. And I'm wondering about how somebody like you, a lone agent, if you like, goes up against a team like that. They're obviously the favourites and they've got, you know, two of the best riders in the world. But that also brings complications, doesn't it? And Chantal Black kind of benefited, I suppose, from being in that scenario last year, and that could happen again. But do you look at that and think, you know, with the confusion that might come with that, there could be an opportunity for somebody like you?
Yeah, of course. That could present an opportunity. And then the reality is it's a really hard course. So the tactics probably become less important. I mean, I think we can confidently say that the climb, the long climb on the smaller circuit, is going to be the defining factor of the race. An uphill finish maybe would have made it that much more simple. But yeah, it's a hard race. So the tactical element is somewhat neutralized to a certain extent. And of course, then it sort of brings out a certain number of riders. You know, it's not like there's 30 riders that could win the race. There's a handful or maximum 10 riders that would be favorites or those that could really stand a chance. So if I am going to race a race on my own, you know, I'm lucky this year in terms of the course, because it does make it that much simpler for me as a rider. And yeah, I suppose it means I have a little bit of a free card. You know, there's no responsibility on me in the race to make the racing or to do anything in particular. But it does also mean that I need everything to come together on the day. You know, I don't have the sort of luxury or the security of knowing that I have five teammates who will help me if I have a problem or a puncture or could maybe help me with feeding or position me. You know, I'm going to have to take care of that myself. Having said that, I am confident in my skills and my ability within the peloton. So that's not a huge concern to me. But yeah, the Dutch are the favorites. Of course, both Anna and Annemiek both want to be world champion, and they both want it badly. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And
it's going to be fascinating, to watch how it works. It's interesting that because we had La Course in July and we spoke to you there, and I think there was a lot of skepticism about that race and about the course. So it did in the end produce a really thrilling race. So I guess it can be hard to tell what kind of racing you're going to see. And also it's that old question of whether, you know, the race is down to the course or the riders. The riders on that day and your team in particular made it a really thrilling race.
Yeah, of course. I mean, a course can be super tough, and at the end of the day, if it's not raced hard, it can still come down to a small bunch sprint, you know. So yeah, it definitely comes down to how it is raced as well, and that will be interesting to see. Of course, at La Course, it was a team objective to make it an exciting race and to sort of put it all out there, you know, because it was a really great opportunity for us in terms of TV exposure. So it's important to use those opportunities and to really showcase women's cycling for what it is. So, as a team, as an individual on that team, I was very proud of our performance there, and we definitely animated the race. So, of course, at the World Champs, we need a country to be doing that as well, you know. Mm. Otherwise, it's not necessarily going to be the amazing showcase that everyone expects it to be. But I'm pretty certain that there's a lot of motivation, you know. I mean, Australia also very motivated with Amanda Spratt, who's had a very good season and also a really good Giro. So for sure, they're a team or a country that usually races aggressively. So I'm sort of imagining that they're a team to look to in terms of putting the challenge out there to the Dutch. Because I think if we just put it all on the Dutch, I don't know, it could be interesting. Then it could end up being predictable or somewhat boring. So I'm hoping that there are some countries in Australia, in Italy, who are going to put themselves out there and try to go for the win.
So that was Ashley Moolman-Passio just talking about, you know, her prospects in the World Championships. It would have suited her better had the finish been up the very, very steep climb that the men go up, although they don't finish up there either. But nevertheless, it's a very hilly course and she should be in the mix. Translating that into winning the race is a whole different proposition. And she's, you know, for all her consistency, which is pretty remarkable, she's always up there. She's always up there in Flèche Wallonne and races like that, really hard races. But she still lacks that big win.
Just that edge. I mean, that kind of thing that... You know, what is it? But you have those riders who consistently get podiums, consistently up there, making these amazing performances, but just not quite getting the win. And as soon as they get one, then wins just breed more wins. But I can't see it happening for Ashley, to be honest, this year. It's just...
Oh, you're writing her off, eh?
No!
Oh, Rose.
No, I mean, just
he
purely...
He asks for our predictions and then shoots them
so
to the ground.
Who do you think, then? Kasia Nevyedova, obviously in good form, just won Tour de l'Ardèche.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Elisa Longoborghini could be a good shout. And I'd love to see her do well up there. Amanda Spratt has had an amazing season.
And as we know from previous podcasts, she has been... Targeting this. I did notice actually there was a lot of the Aussie on, if you go on Strava for this climb, there's a lot of Aussies on the top of the Queen of the Mountain section. So I think they've all been out there and ramping it up.
Well, she went backpacking there, didn't she, last winter?
Could be a really good shout as well, because I would guess that the Australian team will have more cohesion. I don't think it'll be difficult to have more cohesion than the Dutch. I mean, they will work together, but I think that with the Australians it might be easier to get them all behind one rider, and that could be an incredibly powerful force. So actually Amanda Spratt could be a decent shout.
And it's useful to have that many people who are used to that domestique role in one team, because they all know what their job is to do. And Spratt is the clear climber among them. So they know that they've got to get her to this point and that point and then see what she can do at the end. She's good at finish, because obviously it doesn't finish at the top of a climb, it does finish at the bottom, so she's a fast finisher as well.
Going back to what we were saying about Dutch dominance, without wanting to overplay it, it could be the first time that we see any nation with a 1-2-3 on the individual time trial podium. I can't really see past Annemiek van Vleuten, Anna van der Breggen, Ellen van Dijk. They've had magnificent seasons, and with Van Vleuten being the defending world champion, then she gets a spot on top of the two spots that the Netherlands would get. So I think we may well see that Dutch 1-2-3 in the time trial.
Well, a Dutch woman who will not be contesting for either time trial or road race medals is Marianne Vos, who is skipping the world championships to concentrate on the cyclocross season, which I find a bit odd given the form that she was in. Anyway, she will be a teammate of Ashley Moolman-Passio next year. And I spoke to Ashley about her move to CCC and her linking up with Marianne Vos. I was curious whether she knew her well. And here's what she said. This is part of a longer interview that we'll hear later in the year. On paper, at least, you and Marianne Vos, very different talents. You suited very different types of races, although she's usually there. I mean, how well do you know her? How well have you got to know her over the last few years?
I actually know Marianne quite well. In 2014, I invited her to come out to South Africa to take part in the 947 Cycle Challenge, which at the time was not a UCI race. But there was still quite a competitive women's field, and I was racing, and there was just interest to attract more international sort of talent, or to bring exposure to the race. And so I invited Marianne to come out and to experience it and to race. And so that's where I really got to know her well, you know, very well for the first time. But actually, it's quite amazing. I was thinking back, really, when the team was chatting to me about a press release, and it just kind of struck me that when I first started cycling, while I was still at university, and then, you know, my first season or kind of season in Europe was 2010, but I actually broke my collarbone three times in that season, so it wasn't really a consistent or continuous season. But I got to know Martina Brass actually quite well, because she had ridden for Lotto, and that was the team I was riding for. And so, I don't know, she just sort of took an interest in me for some reason, and she would give me advice, you know, and sometimes it was quite critical, but it was good, you know, to get that feedback, to be able to improve and to make the changes. And anyways, it was in 2011, you know, a Dutch team used to come out to South Africa every year to do their winter training camp, and they were staying very close to where I lived at the time. And so Martina got in touch with me and said, hey, why didn't you come join us, you know, for a day, ride with the Dutch team? And it was, for me, you know, at that stage of my career where I was so new and so green, I was starstruck, you know, wow, you know, opportunity to ride with the Dutch national team, you know, and one of which, of course, was Marianne Vos. And what they would always do is, there were, I don't know, about 16 of them, or I don't know how many in total, but they would split up into smaller groups of three or four, you know, so that they would have a harder workout. And I ended up in a group with Martina and Mariana, and it was just the most amazing experience, you know, at this early stage of my career, to have the opportunity to spend the day riding with Marianne Vos and actually chatting to her and getting her advice. And I still remember that so clearly, you know, and she was just so amazing, the way she was very friendly and, you know, very willing to share or to give advice. And ever since then, of course, you know, I've always been friendly to Mariana, and she's always one to smile and greet, you know, and so I've always looked up to her as a cyclist because of that. You know, she's a really approachable, humble person, and she really cares about the people around her. And then to have gotten this opportunity to get to know her better in 2014, and then to also get to know Anton, her brother, and her family, you know, ever since then, you know, it's always whenever I'm at a race and Mariana's dad's there, which he is often there, mm-hmm. he always comes over and chats to me. And not that I'm best friends with her, but I've always had sort of quite a good understanding of her and her family and what drives her. And so then now to be presented with this opportunity to join her on a team, you know, it's pretty amazing. You know, I'm really honored to be able to join forces with Mariana, and to think that in a space of sort of like 9 to 10 years, the progress that I've made, to be going from the young, really green, inexperienced rider that just was dying to get any feedback I could from Mariana, just dying to have the opportunity to ride with her, to be able to join her team as a co-leader. I mean, I'm really proud of the progress I've made, and yeah, I believe this is an important step in my career, and I'm really excited about the opportunity.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for supporting the cycling podcast Femina. You can actually get 50% off a lot of your Science and Sport products for the rest of this month. If you go to scienceandsport.com, if you enter the code CHAMPIONS, you will also get an additional £5 off. This is to mark a summer of Science and Sport success, from Geraint Thomas's Tour de France win to Adam Peaty's world record. He's a swimmer.
I know, he's a wonderful swimmer and a really good guy.
There you go. Really, and a Science and Sport athlete. So go to scienceandsport.com and get your 50% off a lot of products there. Anything that's not discounted, you can use the usual code SISCP25 to get 25% off. Now,
I thought Orla, Champions was in reference to our next section.
Oh. Well, you, I mean, that's
Rose's smile backs that up.
That is an easy mistake to make. We're talking about the Women's 100, the inaugural Cycling Podcast Femina Rafa Women's 100 ride. And you did it, Rose.
I did it. I was champion.
Champion Science in your own world.
Quite nervous, were you? Quite nervous.
I was, yeah. Because I just couldn't stop. In the whole run-up, I got really distracted by 100 kilometres, and I...
But you ride your bike, do you not?
100 kilometres is daunting, though. Not many people do that of a weekend.
Not really. It's one of those things where I probably go on it more in the winter, and then when the cycling season kicks off, I'm just away and eating cheese and bread and drinking a lot and get very
sometimes
unfit.
You go to bike races as
sometimes,
well.
Yeah, on the side. Yeah, and yeah, I get really out of shape, and so the RAF 100 was kind of at the point of me being fairly out of shape. But yeah, I was, and I did do an 80k ride a few weeks before, and I really hit the wall in that, and then thought, oh no, shall I just pretend I'm pregnant and get out of it like someone else?
This is quite a lumpy pretext. Jeez. Put a little
cushion up and the leatherette hot pants underneath, and I can get out of it. But no,
if she's pretending, I'll be very annoyed.
But
ta-da! Just whip the cushion out.
but when I got to it, it was actually just the best day. It really was. I would never have thought that I would come out of it saying that, because I really thought I was going to and I did suffer. I have to say, I did suffer.
It looked and sounded great, and we're very grateful to Hannah Nicklin for stepping forward.
She is a star.
Volunteering to organise it and then organising it so well, and for so many people to turn out for it. And I listened to some of the audio from it, which we're about to hear, and it was really great to hear how many people had come, and it was their first group ride, first long ride, and that's what this was all about, and that's what the RAFA Women's 100 is all about. So let's hear from your day riding around the Kent lanes and hills of South London. Here they are, the RAFA Women's 100.
So here we are at a beautiful, sunny Crystal Palace in South London, barely a cloud in the sky, a little bit of a fresh... not even a breeze, actually, just a fresh feel to the air.
Amazon, and they're going to come off straight away.
So we're here, Rose and Hannah, gathered with your fellow Ride 100ers. How do we feel, ladies?
To be honest, in the run-up, I've been a bit nervous, because I've just been so thinking about that number, 100 kilometres, 100 kilometres, and looking at the hills and thinking, oh my God, I've never been on, a lot of the hills I haven't been on, but I've seen them or been in the car for them and thought I would never want to go on them on a bike. So I've been a bit preoccupied with the 100k and probably forgetting about and meeting new people. And I've got here and there's loads of women here and they're all smiling and friendly and... yeah, so it's going to be good.
And Hannah, Rose isn't exaggerating. Her last message to the group last night was two words, bloody hell. That was it. But yeah, lots of smiles this morning, Hannah.
Yeah. And I think I mean, the first thing, everyone's very prompt. Everyone's very on time, which is quite impressive to me. And everyone seems pretty ready to go. There's loads of different mixes of experience and different levels of nervousness here, but I've been trying my best to reassure everyone. And also, I'm a little bit nervous about leading 20 people into the wilds of Kent, you know? You never know.
Filling us with confidence, Hannah.
Not what you need to hear right now.
More about making sure everyone has a good time.
Yes.
You know, plenty of laughs and cake and reassuring people on the hills and stuff. Top tip, hills always look a lot worse than a car. You learn that when you do race recce in cars. Always look a lot worse than a car than when you're on them.
Do you know that's really good, because they look awful, Rose?
Yeah.
My name's Gemma, and today I wanted to come and ride with some other women from London, wanted to meet some other local riders, tell them about my club, Peckham CC, to get some more women for the club, and just have a good day out.
My name's Emily. I chose to join this ride today because I have never ridden with a whole bunch of women and women only, and I've also never ridden in South East London and the Kent Hills, so all of that sounded like a fun way to spend a Saturday.
I'm Ruth, and I've never ridden in a proper group before, I've never ridden with a club. I'm thinking about joining a club, so I thought I'd try it today, and even better that it was all women.
So, hi, my name is Laura. I decided to join today to go out with a bunch of women, but also in preparation for the 100-mile Velo South next weekend.
My name is Alice, and I accidentally took 3 months off riding, so this would be a good way to dive back in.
I'm not riding this, obviously. I'm 5.5 months pregnant. Although that hasn't stopped Lizzie Dignan, but I'm not a professional rider. But I am really jealous of this stage. I love this, especially with the sun shining and everybody all happy and nervous and excited. And you just sort of
have this moment of thinking, can I do this, can I not, why have I signed up to this, oh I hate it, oh but I love it at the same time, and it makes you feel alive, doesn't it? And the first 20-30k you're thinking, oh yeah, this is great, this is exciting, I can do it. First couple of climbs out of the way, 50k you hate yourself, you hate life, 70k you need a wee and another coffee.
See, Ola, you're saying all of this with a massive smile.
Because I'm not doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
But imagine tonight. No, I love that feeling when you've accomplished something epic.
Thank you so much, everyone, for coming to the inaugural Cycling Podcast Feminine Women's 100 ride.
Hooray!
So awesome to see all of you here. I know there's a really wide variety of experiences and levels of nervousness, but I just want to reassure you again that we're going to go as easy as the easiest rider. I want you all to look after each other. Okay, should we go?
Yes. Woo! Good luck, ladies. Have fun.
Okay, so Hannah, we find ourselves at the second cafe stop.
Yeah.
So what we really need here now is kind of radio equivalent of a daydream sequence, don't we? Like, because we will have literally, on this package, have just said goodbye to Orla.
Yeah.
And now we are
65 kilometres later, you know, in the beautiful sunshine of Lullingstone Country Park, having eaten some fine scones, I have to say. Clotted cream and all.
And how has your shepherding been going?
It's been going okay. Everyone around me, give me a 10 out of 10, right?
We're still here.
No, it's a little bit stressful just because I really want everyone to have a good time, like a positive experience, because these are some of my favourite roads. And they've been like my enemies and then my friends as I've gotten to know them. Some of the hills, which I used to think that were impossible, have like become my training hills. So I just really want to share this stuff with everyone. So just keeping on checking in on everyone and dropping back and like chatting up the hills and stuff. And so far it's a really good vibe, I think.
I'll be honest, they're all still my enemies. Every climb that we have been on is...
But you got up them, didn't you?
I did get up them. Everyone is still looking pretty sunny and happy. Oh! Okay, a bit of, yeah, some cutlery being thrown. But apart from that, it's a good course. How's everyone found it?
You know, we've got to the top. I guess that's what counts. But it's been a really nice day so far. It's a really nice vibe. Yeah. Everyone's having good chats, helping each other up the hill. I get there in the end.
And now, have you done many 100 kilometre rides before?
No, I have not.
Have you ever done any?
I've done a few kind of longer rides, but it's not my normal MO, I'd say. 40-50 milers and I normally stop after that. So yeah, this is a challenge, a good one.
And do you go on many rides where it's all an all women group?
No, never. This is literally my first time. Normally it's all men and maybe two other women. So this has been an absolute delight, I have to say.
Hannah, here we are again. We're back where we started, aren't we?
We're here. It's wonderful. The world turned. We rode 100 kilometres. Three coffee stops. It's not a real ride. It's three different... Do you know what the joke is? The real joke is I don't do coffee stops normally. I don't do cafe... I don't like them. That's the...
Get in Freeb's corner. I'm not talking to you anymore.
But
anyway, that's all from Hannah. I think the cake was good. The hill's not so good. I have to say... I've probably sound in my... The last time we recorded, which was at the second coffee stop, I probably sounded quite chipper. But then after that, it was downhill only in terms of my endurance levels. It was very much uphill straight after that. And then coming up Annerley Hill to finish, bit of a leg breaker. But we're here.
I was cheering you.
You were. Yeah, you did a very good job. And we are sat yet again around with the survivors. We have a cheer, survivors.
Yes. Just going to point out we didn't kill anyone. No one died. They just peeled off and went to different train stations.
When I say survivors, I mean the people who didn't think it was a better idea just to go to a train station at the bottom of Annerley Hill instead of climbing our way up and having a coffee. But and one person we're joined with is Ruth. And Ruth, you've never done 100K before.
No.
How was it?
It was good. It was definitely challenging. I've actually had an amazing day. I've only ever ridden sort of 20, 30, 40K over that a couple of times, but it's definitely not my sort of usual ride. But today was amazing, just being surrounded by a big group of women. Lots of people kind of helped me out at about 50, 60K when I had a tough sort of half an hour.
I have to say that was one of the most wonderful things about the whole ride, was just being surrounded by other women who were all trying to help, look out for each other, help each other up the climbs. Well, sometimes feed each other and all sorts. But yeah, I mean, that was for me really, really special. I mean, that's something that we want to encourage more women to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think whoever you are, wherever you ride, riding with people gives you a special kind of solidarity. It's the kind of solidarity I feel like we get, particularly in nations where it's like harder to cycle on the roads, where there are cars which can be a little bit aggressive and stuff. Like, your job is to look out for one another. I really treasure female solidarity in particular, but the solidarity in general of being a rider in a group of riders.
And thanks to Rafa as well for giving everyone the opportunity to come together, for women to come together and challenge themselves, learn new things about themselves. And there's a lot of people here in Rafa, and they all looked spectacular while we were doing it. The pain faces were on, but we all looked wonderful. And also, Hannah, massive thank you to you for organising it and bringing everyone together. It's been a blast. I say that now, it's been a blast.
Thanks, Adam.
Well, that sounded wonderful, Rose. A great day.
Can I just say, well done, really?
Thank you.
Because Rose isn't overstating it. She was really nervous, or at least she seemed to be anyway. In our little WhatsApp group the day before, there was no hiding the anxiety. And it was the same for a lot of the women who turned up that morning. There was a lot of sort of anxious, nervous smiles. And one girl came over to us. She didn't know anybody.
I think most of the riders, that was what was amazing about it as well, was that most of the riders there didn't know anyone else, decided to come along. And because Hannah had been so welcoming and friendly, and Hannah really made the day for everyone, I think. And I think inspired a lot of people to go and sign up and join. There's so many local clubs around. I had no idea. But
well, she sent out a message to everyone afterwards, listing the sort of more female-friendly clubs as well in London, which, you know, if any of our listeners know of female-friendly clubs around where they live, it'd be lovely. Just let us know on Twitter and we'll share it. And because it can be quite daunting. And we were saying this and asking the question about the difference. I've done one women's only ride, and the other rides I've done have all been mixed, and the difference between the two. And it's mainly just the supportive nature of it is different. The competitive nature of it is different. And it is just that little bit less daunting if you're not used to it. And that's not to be patronising to women who race incredibly
hard.
It's
not just a female thing. Cycling is a daunting sport. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody who takes it up has to go through this process of, you know, going into bike shops even and talking the language, a language you don't know, and turning up at a club and riding a club 10. You know, I remember when I did my first club 10, I was 16. I didn't sleep a wink the night before.
Aww.
No, I was a 15. I did not sleep at all. I mean, it was like I was riding the Tour de France, you know. I was so nervous.
How did you do?
And
didn't do it.
Can't really remember. But it's a complicated technical sport. There are rules that you might not know.
Well, there's lots of
kit. As I say, there's a language.
And,
yeah, there's kit and the bike.
And some people are more welcoming and open and friendly than others. Some people
take a pleasure and a pride in
being involved in the sport for a long time. And
I think that's the great thing about this Women's 100 initiative. Mm. These are rides that are set up, designed for people who are perhaps not used to riding in groups and that distance. And as Hannah made clear from the start, it was about going at the pace of the slowest rider, and nobody was to be dropped, and etc. etc. And these are brilliant initiatives, because, you know, once you've done it and you've enjoyed it, you don't look back. You know, you realize,
all over the world,
you can do it, and it's fun, and there's nothing better than riding in a group if you kind of know what you're doing. But
and,
making
and
that first step is difficult.
To that as well is that I have to give a shout out to Shell, who came along on the ride, and she was on a bike with flat pedals and panniers on the back.
Oh my life!
And she came along
her.
And did the 100 kilometers.
Wow!
Well, and yeah, she was nowhere near the back, I should say as well. She's very strong, but it was just, I just thought when I saw that, I thought, wow, that, you know, you can just turn up on any bike in any kit. I mean, it's lovely if you have Rafa kit, I have to say, but
oh, you got some nice new Rafa kit, did you, Rose, for it? Yeah,
I yeah. might have pranked Rose somewhat, showing off that it was brand new. I tried to kid her that her label was hanging out, and Rose was like, oh, no.
Oh my god, yeah, and it really got me as well.
Rafa
because
sorted you out, did they?
That they did, nice. They
very
did.
Sharp.
I was very, yeah, I looked sharper than, you know, as soon as I got on the bike, I looked less sharp, but. No,
all
very
the gear,
nice
no
kit.
Idea.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
bright
not
pink,
true. That's
bright
not
pink.
True.
I know
don't
that's
do yourself
not
a
true.
Disservice.
I saw you, Rose. I, you know, a few weeks ago, you did, as you say, an 80-kilometre ride.
You did. You saw me at the end of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You may have looked a bit the worst for wear, but, you know.
Who wouldn't after 80K?
I did.
You may have been
I
stuffing
did.
Cake down your throat for a good half hour
I
afterwards,
did.
But, you know, who hasn't been there? We've all
I
been there.
I thought you were doing the same and you drove on.
No, I was like that. I was like that after riding 5 miles. Back from the centre of town this morning.
Yeah, yeah. I arrived when you were. Yeah,
I hit the wall and clapped.
Hit the wall at the traffic lights.
There's a whole empty packet of chocolate digestives.
Chocolate
digis. Kitchen there.
Anyway, that's a wonderful note to end on. Yeah, the women's 100. I'm glad it was a great success. I was at the Vuelta and I was following it with interest, and it was great to see an idea that came about from somebody sending a tweet actually happen and photographic evidence to exist, or an Orla blessing. To send them on their way. Yeah. I mean, what more could you
Sister
want?
Orla.
Sister Orla. Sister Orla. What more could you want? A blessing in Dutch next year, maybe. Anyway, that's all for now. Orla and I are off to Innsbruck. We'll bring you a regular podcast, I think, and a cycling podcast, Femina, from Innsbruck. So all that to look forward to. In the meantime, Rose, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for having me. And have a great trip.
Mini break in Innsbruck.
I'm going to be at a Scottish wedding. So
they're winning.
In between the Cayley and the... I don't know. I can't think of another Scottish thing. Bagpipes?
I think the bagpipes will come first.
Okay.
The bagpipes and the Cayley.
All right, between the bagpipes and the Cayley, I'll listen. What day are you going to be? What day is the
we
podcast
fly on
going
Wednesday,
out?
Don't we?
Wednesday till Monday.
Till the Monday, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, look forward to hearing it.
Can't wait to head there. Let's do it, shall we?
Thanks, Orla.
Thank you both.
You are listening to the cycling podcast Femina, supported by Rafa. Celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.